Here Be Monsters is a show that invites you to explore fear and the unknown.
I saw her face change. I saw her see where I'd pulled my hair out.
Psychological warfare was always considered kind of an oddity, something done by freaks.
On the count of three, we're literally going to step out of our body. Step out.
You can find the new season of Here Be Monsters on August 17th at kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call a potato.
Is Donald Trump in free fall? Three new national polls have him down 9, 10, and 15 points. And he doesn't seem to be taking it well. Welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the self-contained opinion bubbles that dominate political debate. I'm Josh Barrow, senior editor at Business Insider. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left is Margie O'Mero, a Democratic pollster and executive vice president at PSB Research. Our special guest is AJ Delgado. She's a conservative columnist, a lawyer, and a Donald Trump supporter. Welcome to you all. So this was one of those weeks that felt like a month. There was a sharp shift in the polls, starting with a Democratic convention bounce, but the polling has actually kept getting worse for Trump. Polls taken the first 3 days after the Democratic convention showed Clinton up in the mid to high single digits, but polls taken during this week seemed to show her up around 10 points, or in the case of the grimmest poll for Trump from Marist, 15 points. Trump has thus been deprived of polls as a topic to talk about, so he's filled the space with other stuff, declining to endorse Paul Ryan and John McCain for re-election, attacking the Kahn family, rehashing old controversies from the primary, like his remarks about Megyn Kelly bleeding from her wherever, where he insists he meant her nose, and claiming to have seen a non-existent video of pallets of money being offloaded from a plane in Iran. AJ, you've been for Trump essentially from the beginning. What's with this week? Is your candidate imploding?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, obviously, there's no denying that it's been a bad week, but it's not coming from the grassroots. It's not coming from the voters and the public. It's more these polls are just showing a reaction to what has been a media-driven and a fabricated story against Mr. Trump, mainly this Mr. Kahn controversy. We saw countless headlines with false information, such as Donald Trump attacks Mr. Kahn. He did no such thing. So it was really an appalling week from the standpoint of a supporter, but also from the standpoint of just somebody who values intellectual honesty, to see the lengths to which the media went to attack Mr. Trump, falsely so, create a fake story. And yeah, we've seen results of it in the polls. I won't deny that. But I think Mr. Trump will bounce right back. It's just been a bad week. There is no denying that.
Margie, what do you make of that? Is the media driving the bus here or following it?
I mean, it's really laughable. I mean, Trump boasts of the media attention he gets. He lives and thrives off the media attention. You'd almost think that he feels he can win if he simply has more Twitter followers or better ratings, that somehow that translates into 270 electoral votes. And then all of a sudden, the media covers with the same fervor his missteps, and it's the media's fault, and it's a fake or fabricated story. When we're talking about Trump's own words here, and there's just no denying that Trump has made these comments. I mean, these are things that have come from Trump's mouth or Trump's fingers. And it's no surprise that the polls have shown him taking a nosedive. Now, I believe the polls are so many polls that are clearly right now. The question is, are they going to be right in November? What we have now, certainly there's no guarantee that that's going to be a permanent state of play, you know, months from now. But make no mistake, with this many bad polls, this is a reality currently.
Rich, what have you made of the reaction of Republicans to this week? There's been this sort of, I thought it was kind of pathetic, discussion among Republican insiders about, well, what if Trump takes his name off the ballot and the RNC gets to replace him? Politico's insiders poll found 70% of Republican insiders saying anonymously they would like Donald Trump to remove himself. But of course, these people, most of them won't say it publicly, and they didn't do what they could have done in the year leading up to the Republican convention that actually could have caused him to not be the nominee.
It's pathetic wishful thinking the way there's been a lot of wishful thinking pretty much since Trump won Indiana, which assured that he would be the nominee and made it very likely we would be in something like this place, although the Republican establishment wanted to tell itself fairy tales that he was going to make a miraculous pivot and transform into a different kind of person, a different kind of candidate. So there's no doubt the last couple of weeks have materially reduced his chances of being elected president. One, Hillary got a bounce from her convention, which wasn't a, we didn't know for a certainty 2 weeks ago that was going to happen. Two, he's again kind of recklessly thrown away some of the party unity that had developed around the convention, just the same way he did shortly after Indiana, when a lot of establishment Republicans rallied around him and then attacked Judge Correll and had a lot of Republicans recoiling from him again. And finally, these controversies, they really go to his potential standing or quality as a commander-in-chief. So therefore, I don't think they're transitory. I think they will linger. All that said, I doubt Hillary is going to stay ahead by 9 or 10 points if we think that's where she is today. Probably her bounce and the effect of this bad week will settle down some, and she'll probably be ahead about 5 points going into Labor Day, which is a very strong position, but doesn't mean the race is over, especially given her vulnerabilities.
See, I've been wondering about that. Certainly, I think it's possible that the race will tighten between now and November, but it also seems to me like it's possible that it will widen. And part of the reason why I think there's a lot of uncertainty is that when you look at the internals within these polls, you're seeing Donald Trump somewhat underperforming where Mitt Romney was 4 years ago, but the demographic groups have moved a great deal. Trump is actually doing quite well with white voters who didn't go to college, especially men, and he's doing remarkably terribly with college-educated white women. It looks like Hillary Clinton is likely to win the votes of college-educated whites, which is a demographic group that Democrats have never won in the era of polling. Even Barry Goldwater won college-educated whites over Lyndon Johnson. And so when I look at that and think, you know, well, why are all of these suburban white women, basically, who many of whom vote Republican, abandoning Trump this time around? And I think it's a lot of the stuff that you're describing there, Rich. Concerns about his character, about his stability, about his suitability to control the nuclear arsenal. And it seems to me like those are concerns that not only might not recede, but there are a lot more Republican women who went to college out there who could still abandon him going forward. And if there's more deterioration in those groups, then you could see Clinton getting an even larger lead in the polls and ultimately winning the election by some figure in the teens. I don't know, AJ, is there a reason that we shouldn't think
like
about that?
I'd like to push back on that a bit, especially on something Margie said about these are Trump's own words, she said, and how this con issue was not really a media-driven controversy. Margie, when you say they're his own words, can you tell me exactly when he attacked Mr. Con? Because maybe I'm missing something.
Sure. When he questions the reason behind Mrs. Khan staying silent and doing it multiple times, what he's doing, I mean, he's implying that she was silent because of her religion in a way that's so grotesquely inappropriate. And then he says on Twitter, he came after me. Don't I have the right to defend myself? The Fox News poll showed that 2/3 of Americans feel that it was out of bounds. So whether it's an attack or out of bounds or shameful or disgraceful. This is the consensus of not the media, but of Republican leaders, of John McCain, of voters, of even people who previously or still currently are supporting Trump. And it's not the language that George W. Bush used. It's not the language that Hillary Clinton's used. At times when a Gold Star family has a comment, it's up for the president. It's up to the president or someone who wants to be president to demonstrate real leadership and compassion. And he has no ability to do either.
He also, I would note, said that he thought maybe the reason Kaiser Khan had such a problem with him is that he's so strong about preventing Islamist terrorism in the United States. So that was an additional line of attack.
Again, right. He has a right to express his point of view as to why Mr. Khan doesn't like him. He has a right to wonder why Ms. Khan went up on the stage. And I admit I wondered that as well, why she was on the stage and not speaking. That's not an attack whatsoever. And I think most of the American public, your poll notwithstanding that you cited, would probably agree that that's not what should qualify as a vicious attack, as the media has portrayed.
But there are well-established political norms around how you treat families that have lost loved ones who attack you. George W. Bush never attacked Cindy Sheehan, who is a media sensation.
Cindy Sheehan wasn't given the floor at a Democratic convention, Rich, was she? Did I miss that, too?
She had a major media megaphone. Her protests during Bush's vacations were covered wall to wall by some networks, and Bush was extremely gentle with her, which is one a matter of shrewd politics, because if you're not, you're going to get the kind of reaction that Trump did this week in going after the cons. And two, just as a basic matter of decency, you honor someone's loss. And this is so easy to do that even Hillary Clinton can do it. You know, when she's asked about the families of the guys who died in Benghazi, she always goes out of her way to say, "My heart goes out to them," as the first thing, and then tries to gently deflect it and disagree with them as gently as possible, because you want to show these people an extra measure of respect.
No. In March, she was asked about Pat Smith's comments, Pat Smith, who lost her son in Benghazi, and she said that Pat Smith is, I quote, wrong. She is absolutely wrong. That, by your loose definition, Margie, of what constitutes an attack, and yours, Rich, that's an attack to say this woman, this Gold Star mother, is wrong, absolutely wrong.
So if you look at the actual text of the whole question, which I did a few days ago, you'll see, as Rich noted, three different places where Clinton used very compassionate, gentle, you know, human language that you would use when talking to someone who's lost a child, and that we're even debating.
Margie, in the interview with George Stephanopoulos, where this all started, he said that Mr. Khan himself seemed like a nice man. That's a quote. And he praised his son's heroism. So he did exactly what Hillary did. He used the soft language. He honored Mr. Khan's fallen hero son. And then he questioned why the wife, are we going to lie and say no one else questioned this?
Why, as a presidential candidate, would you engage on that level and bring up that religiously fraught question? There's no need to do it except for...
I don't think it's religious. I think it's cultural.
I don't think we're going to convince AJ about this. I don't think the point of this is that, but I just want to say, I think this illustrates the difficulty Donald Trump is in, which is that Trump clearly believes what AJ has been saying, which is that his behavior has been totally appropriate. There's nothing wrong with anything he said. He certainly doesn't need to apologize for it. There's a significant base of Donald Trump's voters who agree with him on that idea and love the fact that he never apologizes for anything. But a thing we're clearly seeing in the polls, and I'm sorry, AJ, but this isn't just a made up thing. We're seeing it over and over reflected in his declines in the polls, that the majority of the electorate disagrees with him, thinks this is not an appropriate, compassionate way to behave. And it shows where the Republican Party is stuck, because it's not that there's no market for the way Donald Trump behaves. There's a very large market for it. It's just not as large as the market of people who dislike the way that he behaves. And I think that's why you can't fix him and why he's not going to change, because it's not like everybody thinks he's wrong. It's just that a majority of people think he's wrong.
But correlation doesn't indicate causation. And you're implying that because he's down in the polls, that's because the majority of the American public disagrees with the remarks he made about Khan. That's Hillary's post-convention bounce. That could be anything, really. So when you're saying, well, the American public disagrees with the way he speaks, that's not true. He would have never had more votes than any Republican candidate in history has ever had if the American public disagreed with the way he speaks. The American public loves the way he speaks.
That's the whole point. You're confusing a plurality of Republican primary voters with a majority of Americans. And unfortunately, that's the mistake Trump supporters have made all along. They're not the same thing. You know, he can get between 33% and 42% in most of these polls, and that's very likely not enough to win this election unless Gary Johnson pops in a major way. And then just as a matter of tactics, I'm sure if we apply the truth serum, even you would admit that his answer last Sunday about the cons was perfectly suited to raise the profile of the cons and to have a week dominated by this very sympathetic family. So just as a matter of tactics, it was a gross mistake.
We have to go to break, but let us know what you thought about Donald Trump's rough week at kcrw.com/LRC, our Facebook page, or message our Twitter account. That's at LRCKCRW. Up ahead, where this is going to leave Republicans. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Listen to Left, Right, and Center on demand from KCRW's smartphone apps, now for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And share your thoughts on today's show at kcrw.com/LRC.
Subscribe to KCRW's Today's Top Tune download podcast to receive a free song of the day. Find Today's Top Tune on KCRW's iTunes page.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Josh Barrow of Business Insider and MSNBC. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left is Margie O'Mero, Democratic pollster and executive vice president at PSB Research. Our special guest is conservative lawyer and columnist A.J. Delgado. So back in 2013, after Mitt Romney's loss sort of shocked Republican insiders, the Republican National Committee put out the so-called autopsy report recommending changes to the party. Its only really big specific policy recommendation was that the party should pass comprehensive immigration reform, but it broadly focused on getting the party to reach out better to young people and minorities. Now, obviously, the autopsy has been ignored to a great extent in this election, but I think there's good reason to think it wouldn't have worked if it had been implemented. Trump's primary win shows that for much of the existing Republican electorate, the last thing they wanted was a party that was more pro-immigration and more multicultural. So, Rich, am I right to look at this situation and sort of see a very grim outlook for the GOP even after this election? I think they're about to lose this badly, but also, I don't think they're going to be able to find a way to coalesce around a candidate and agenda that simultaneously pleases a majority of stakeholders within the party and a majority of voters.
I don't know. It's so hard to know what's going to happen 2 months from now, let alone what the Republican Party is going to look at like in 2019 when it tries to do this again, assuming Trump loses. But I think the party needs to go in a more populist direction, just shorn one of Trump's major character and temperament flaws, and two, shorn of his excesses that are offensive to large swaths of voters. But I think a more populist party that doesn't have these vulnerabilities of Trump will have more appeal. It's just that there's going to be, if Trump loses, a major ideological bloodletting, and it's going to get even uglier than it has been, at least in the short term.
AJ, I assume you're still expecting a Trump win, but what do you hope the Republican Party does if he loses to reshape itself?
Well, I agree with Rich. I think if it's to survive in any form of unified fashion, it has to adopt a more populist approach. And that populist approach means no amnesty, stop this nonsense about immigration reform, stop this nonsense about convincing us that immigration is good for the economy and so forth. It isn't. So I think it has to go in that direction, but it won't. It refuses to. The Paul Ryans and the John McCains and the Marco Rubios and the GOP elite will never change their line of thinking on that one issue, which is the biggest issue for the base. So I think any way you look at it, the GOP as we know it is cracked. And I don't see whether, if Trump wins or loses, how it survives in any recognizable or in any manner that makes sense and in any cohesive manner. It's just two different parties, the elites and the base, pretending to be one. It's very odd. It won't survive that way.
Margie, when you look at it as a Democratic pollster, is that a concept that scares you, a populist without Trump's excesses?
I don't know what it would look like to have a Republican National Party that generated enthusiasm with its voters and also was appealing to a majority of the electorate. Those two, at least in the current state of play, those two things seem at odds, right? They seem mutually exclusive. There was an analysis at Washington Post Monkey Cage blog where they looked at the enthusiasm and excitement and vote for Trump versus the votes for McCain and Romney in their primaries. And you saw a lot more enthusiasm for Trump among folks who had, exclusionary views toward race and ethnicity. And that was not true for McCain and Romney. And then you had McCain and Romney, suffer in the sense that they did not seem to generate enthusiasm with the base. Voters did not at the time seem super excited about those candidates. So I don't know where the Republican Party goes. I know as a Democrat, it's not that I wish for their failure. I definitely wish for the opposite of what's happening right now. This toxic dialogue over race and ethnicity that is absolutely more sharp this time around than in any past election. Is so, even if Trump loses and collapses and loses by a dramatic amount, it is so corrosive. I hate it. And I just wish the Republican Party would find another direction. I just think it's so terrible for all of us.
Rich Rostouthit wrote a column about a week ago, more or less asking Democrats for a negotiated surrender or complaining that they're not offering one, basically looking at the Democratic convention in large part as a pitch to anti-Trump Republicans saying, Trump is unacceptable. We know you know Trump is unacceptable. Come vote for us, but without real policy concessions. And I'm just sort of wondering, do you feel like Republicans are entitled to that? Is that something you would expect to get from Democrats? And what would that have to look like?
No, I don't feel entitled to that in any way. It's a shame that Hillary felt as though she didn't have to make any substantive concessions. In fact, all the concessions were to the left, and she and the Democrats figured they could just define Trump as unacceptable and just not meeting the basic standard for a commander-in-chief. And the last week have provided evidence that that was a pretty good bet. And you look at the NBC poll that has her up 9, and you look at all the individual qualities that people are asked about the two candidates. Everyone that really has to do with being a commander-in-chief, handling a crisis, handling foreign affairs, handling improving our image abroad, Hillary is winning going away on all of those. So she figures she can just repeat over and over again, in effect, that line we heard at the convention so many times, that you can't trust this guy with the nuclear codes. And she figures, why does she need to give Republicans anything if that argument cuts so well?
I think the polling figure I was most struck by this week was from a poll of Pennsylvania. That's the poll that had Clinton up 11 in the state. It had her winning the four suburban counties around Philadelphia by 40 points. And this is a region that Mitt Romney lost by 9 points 4 years ago. It's an area that's gotten increasingly Democratic, but that's a huge shift. It's basically like almost half the people who were still, or almost, about a third of the people who were still left voting Republican in those counties intend to flip and vote for Clinton instead of Trump if that poll is accurate. And so I guess, AJ, my question for you is, if you see this flight of certain parts of the Republican Party that aren't happy with the direction that Trump is taking the party in, how do you retain them? I mean, they don't owe you their vote. When you look at the fact that this candidate that you like a lot, that a lot of the party likes a lot, is being rejected by a significant minority of the party, what are the concessions that Trump or that this faction of the party owes to them to keep them in the party?
I don't think it's a matter of making concessions to them. I think it's a matter of appealing to their either their common decency as Republicans or as conservatives, or simply what it is they want to see in the future of this country, and asking them to vote and join us based on that. It's not a matter of concessions. Do it for yourself and the future of the country. Do you really want to see a nation that is run by Hillary Clinton? Do you want to see her making appointments to the Supreme Court? Do you want to see her in charge of our economic and tax policy? Think if you're any stripe of a conservative, you would say, no, I don't. And your choice is between two. It's either Donald Trump or her. So it's not a matter of concessions. It's a matter of just appealing to their common sense. If you're in any form of conservative, your choice is clear. It's got to be Trump. So I'm still hopeful that, you know, as the pain and the hurts of the primaries wears off day by day, that significant minority, which is still significant, as you said, will join us.
I've started seeing people making comparisons between this election and the 1996 election, which Bill Clinton won by about, 8.5 points over Bob Dole. And in the last month or so of that election, Republicans started more or less admitting that Dole was going to lose. And they started shaping their messaging around the idea that Republicans needed to retain Congress. And they particularly used this phrase that you should not give a blank check to Bill Clinton. And this, or something at least, worked. And Republicans did manage to retain both houses of Congress, even though they lost a presidential election quite badly that year. I'm interested in both Rich and Margie, what you think about the prospects of that are in this election. Do you think there's an effective way for Republicans to message, you may not be voting for Trump, but make sure to have us keep Congress? And is that likely to be an effective thing?
it's going to be a real challenge. I mean, you've seen a lot of, obviously, you have a lot of Republican senators in battleground states, whether it's Pennsylvania or New Hampshire and so on, who are trying to distance themselves from Trump, but haven't done it very clearly. So I don't know how they're going to be able to walk that line. I've heard pollsters talk about how they're seeing increasing amounts of split ticket voting. That's usually not the way Senate and presidential years go. That's usually not, you know, usually there's a lot of covariance between Senate votes and presidential votes. We did focus groups of Walmart moms, and this was in 2014, so it was a midterm year, and we went to Arkansas and Iowa, where there were battleground, really contested Senate races, and we asked people, do you want to make sure that the Senate's in control, and you know, because of president and this, and do you want to flip the Senate to Republicans? And people had no idea what we were talking about. I mean, they had really no idea that, you know, we said which party's in control of the Senate, who's the leader of the Senate, who's the leader of the House, and these, you know, fairly engaged but nonetheless swing voters had basically no idea what we were talking about. So the sense that, you know, people may have this theory that they want to have split government. They want to make sure nobody has a blank check. They want to make sure that there are checks and balances. In practice, a lot of swing voters are not being very strategic. That's not how they approach the voting booth. So I think it's going to be a big uphill battle.
Well, there's been a lot of chatter over the last week about Republican leaders dumping Trump. That's not going to happen no matter what he says or does until they really believe that he's completely sunk and has no chance to win the election. Then suddenly they'll all find principle and run away from him and try to save the House and the Senate. Now, Margie's right. Usually there's no escaping or running away from a presidential candidate, but this time might be different because Trump is so different. Even President Obama, in that excoriating convention speech attacking him, said he's not a Republican and not a conservative. And I think most people believe that about him, kind of understand that about him. So there's a chance that a Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania or a Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire, both of whom are very endangered, but both of whom are also very talented politicians, might find a way to escape.
Well, we've reached that time once again for our famed Left, Right, and Center rants featuring pet peeves from across the political spectrum. H.A. Delgado, what's your rant?
Just very quickly, I want to remind everybody, it's still anyone's race. The July 27th LA Times poll had Trump 7 points ahead of Hillary. Things can flip back to that very easily. And I want to remind listeners to please read up on the Clinton Foundation. Hillary Clinton, we didn't mention earlier, has horrific trustworthy ratings in the poll. She's somebody who's not liked, who isn't considered trustworthy. The Clinton Foundation has a lot to do with it. There was a great article in Politico. I suggest everybody read it. It's called Clinton Foundation Scandals Will Be Good Fodder for Trump. Please go look that up. Read it. Let me know what you think.
Rich Lowry, it's your soapbox.
It's funny how coincidences work. The Obama administration wants us to believe that it was just a matter of timing that Iran released 4 American prisoners at the very same time that we sent $400 million in cash to Tehran in a cargo plane. By this standard, every ransom that led to the release of any hostage was a mere coincidence.
Margie O'Meara.
So I agree with AJ on one thing. This race is still up in the air. It can go either way. I would urge Democrats to not feel the least bit complacent when looking at the latest raft of bad polls for Trump. That said, with the exception of co-guest Rich Lowry, for Republicans out there who are not out front and clear about how ill-suited Trump is, who are trying to have it both ways, who are trying to not endorse him but yet support him, to call out his buffoonery at the same time saying that they're going to vote for him anyway, that support will not age well. If he wins, you may have blood on your hands, literally, not just figuratively. And if he loses, that support will be immediately, it won't save you. The fact that he'll lose is not going to save you. It's going to be a terrible, terrible legacy for Republicans who've sat on the sidelines.
For my rant, I'd like to talk about cargo shorts. There has been an unfortunate trend of counterintuitive pieces arguing that cargo shorts are an appropriate article of clothing for an adult man. There is only one appropriate time to wear cargo shorts. It is 1997 when you are in middle school. Dress like a grown-up, please, even though it is summer. That's all we have time for today. Thanks to Rich Lowry, AJ Delgado, and Margie O'Meara. Laura Dinemillion produced today's program. Our technical director is JC Swadek. Ashleen Knutson is our production assistant. I'm Josh Barrow. Thanks for joining us, and tune in next week for more Left, Right, and Center.
Download the podcast from KCRW.com or from iTunes and share your comments at KCRW.com/LRC. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by KCRW.